Abortion moves fast, and right now in our communities, women are being pressured to make irreversible decisions in moments of fear and panic. They're told to act quickly or risk losing support. Many feel they have no other option, but because of you, they do. At Preborn Network Clinics, a woman receives what the abortion industry will never offer: compassion without pressure, clarity about the life growing inside her, real support to welcome her baby, and the hope of the gospel. She's given a free ultrasound and space to breathe, and more than 80% of the time, when a mother sees her baby on a preborn ultrasound, she chooses life. This March, Preborn is believing to save 6,800 babies, but it will take 124 partners saying yes every day. Here's my ask: pause your busy day for just a moment and become a yes right now. Just $28 provides one ultrasound. $140 helps five mothers. Every dollar helps save babies and share hope. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250, baby, or visit preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
We inform.
Religious freedom is about people of faith being able to live out their faith, live out their convictions, no matter where they are.
We equip.
Sacred honor is the courage to speak truth, to live out your free speech.
We also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance character, and character hope.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach. Thanks for joining me today. And we've got a special guest. We're going to be talking about a cool opportunity for you to sign on to something Understanding the Word is doing with Citizen Go. And it's all about the American Covenant. Anna Derbyshire with us. Anna, can you hear me?
I can. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. Thanks for being part of a great great work, and love doing things in the 250th and getting people to take advantage of this opportunity to learn about America's founding and how we hopefully have a, Lord willing, another 250 years of a great nation. Yes. Tell us about the project.
Well, when the president announced that we were having a rededication to the Lord as a nation, that we're going to be one nation under God and declare that, it really dawned on me that that's a national, that's not something just the president can do, it's something the people must do. And so that's when we came up with the plan to gather signatures into a leather-bound document that we're hoping to present to the Library of Congress. As a commemorative action by the nation, people from all 50 states and all the U.S. territories being able to gather up and say yes as part of the American covenant that we are indeed one nation under God.
Love it. So is it something anybody can do? Like how do they actually sign on?
Anyone can do it. And it's, if you go to the AmericanCovenantProject.com, you can sign it right there. And the names will just be alphabetical. They won't be identified by state or zip code or anything like that to keep it, you know, protected in that way. But we're gathering, we started 2 days ago and we have over 1,000 signatures already. And so our goal is to get to 25,000, commemorating our 250th, of course, year. And then at 25,000, we have to cut it off because the book can only be so thick and we also are under time crunch. We have David Hoke is going to be our binder. He's going to actually make it hand leather crafted from Understanding the Word. And he handcrafts Bibles for legislators around the country. And he is going to hand bind in leather this very special edition.
All right. In the time that you said that, I was able to sign up. So,
yes.
AmericanCovenantProject.com. Did I go to the or to? Because it moved over to Citizen
the American,
Go.
Okay. Yes. Well, it will take you over to Citizen Go after you've signed the covenant. And you can go from there with all of that. But yes, once you sign the American Covenant Project.com, your name will be in the volume. And we're also going to be able to have it, not the one, of course, it's leather bound, but if you want to order that after we get it printed, you can actually, you'll be able to order that online as well. So if you want a copy of it, you can have that.
Nice. All right. One Nation Under God. And so you guys are going to present it to or deliver it to the Library of Congress. You're going to hopefully do it on the 16th when the big event happens in D.C., right? That's the goal?
Yes. Or maybe that week sometime. We're kind of going with what their schedule is and how we're able to arrange that. We're also in contact with trying to get maybe it into the Congressional Record. We're still a work in progress trying to see what all we can do with this. It's going to be a really neat thing because it's this generation's testimony that we indeed are one nation under God. And we aren't going to have this opportunity again in our lifetime. So this is going to be a really great thing to have your name on. And you'll be able to look it up and say, there's my name in the 250th year of our nation that we covenanted as the American people. That indeed we are. And you'll see what the covenant says there. I don't know if you want me to read
that's
it.
That's what I was looking for. Yes. In fact, I was sitting here. I was searching for it right now. But okay. Now I see it. Yeah. The American covenant, we the undersigned Americans in this year of our Lord 2026 do solemnly affirm and declare before Almighty God. Go ahead. You take it from there.
Okay. That we are one nation under God, that all men and women are created equal and are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights. Among these being life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that these rights are not granted by government, but come from the hand of the Creator, who is the author of liberty and the supreme judge of the world, that we humbly acknowledge the blessings of divine providence upon this land and upon our forebears who established this republic upon the firm foundation of faith in God, that we recommit ourselves to the sacred covenant our fathers made to live as one people under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all, and that we do now, in this moment of national rededication, publicly profess our trust in Almighty God as the source of our freedoms and the sure foundation of our republic. We therefore sign our names to this covenant so that future generations and leaders of our nation may know that in our time we chose to stand and rededicate ourselves, the United States of America, one nation under God.
Nice. I love it. I love it, man. It is a perfect time to do it too. I mean, this is, for the 250th, as you well know, most nations fall apart at 250 years. And so we're looking to break that cycle and instead, become stronger. Once again, rebuild the foundations, rebuild liberty in our country. And this is exactly, the foundation upon which we must build. There's some other language in the declaration about, you know, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such forms. I mean, that's essentially what you're saying here with this covenant is the foundation upon which we're building, the principles upon which we're laying this foundation are godly principles.
Yes. And again, it's got to be the people of this nation. It's not just something the government can do. We as the people of this nation must commit ourselves that we truly are one nation under God. And that comes from us. It doesn't just come from the government. The government may disagree with us from time to time on these things, but we, the people, are the ones who must make this covenant again before God. This nation belongs to Him.
Yeah, amen. Hey, tell us more about Citizen Go that's organizing this.
Well, we are a grassroots movement that's actually worldwide, and we defend family life and freedom around the world. As a matter of fact, right now I'm sitting in the United Nations, just finishing up the Commission on the Status of Women. So we do international work trying to defend the truth, not only at the national level, but also at the international level. I've been able to speak at the Human Rights Council in Geneva on behalf of parental rights and child protections. And so we do a lot of really great things. But this is, as the USA director, this is something that's so dear to my heart. And we, you know, being here among the nations even this week, I look around the room and there are many nations that that follow godly principles that are Christian nations at the core, but the United States is the only one that is like this. And the United States actually here voted alone several times to stand for what we know as truth and for freedom and for women. And so we do that with our lives. At Citizen Go, we defend the truth at all levels of government and corporations. And but we give a voice to the grassroots. So anyone who wants to stand and say, you know, I can't go to the United Nations, I can't go to Austin, I can't go to Washington, D.C. or wherever it is, but you can send people. And that's how we go, is we are actually supported by the grassroots, $5 at a time, $7 at a time. We don't have huge donors, and we are not backed by any government organizations. So, yeah, that's who we are.
I noticed on your website the City of Austin petition that you did, and I was completely unaware that they were even trying to change the yes. logo there, or that it had yes. a cross in it. All of that was yes. new to me. So thank you for taking on that fight yeah. right here in my state, in my backyard, and rallying people to win that. I gotta say, I'm surprised. I mean, City of Austin is like, you know, it's the San Francisco of the South, so it's right. I've lived, you know, 30 minutes from there most of my life. Mm-hmm. Now we're about an hour from there, but this just shows that if the people get involved, even in mm-hmm. some of these blue areas that you think the left completely owns, you can still win these battles.
Right. Absolutely. And that's what we do, is we pick up the battles and we fight them, but we can't do it alone. Not a single voice, not a single organization can do it, but we collaborate, like we are collaborating with Understanding the Word on this project. And it takes all of us. And, you know, they've talked about us being the silent majority, but, you know, we're not silent anymore. And I'm so proud of conservatives for stepping up and doing the right thing and standing for truth. But we do have to do it together.
What's the do you guys have state chapters, or do people just go to the website and get involved there?
Right. Right now we have just a national, what you'd call national group, yeah. but we have, like I said, we have Spain and Great Britain and Kenya and Canada and South American nations and all of Europe representatives and grassroots people from around the world. You know, it's a shock to me to find out that there are still conservatives in Europe.
Yeah.
That there truly, truly are. And they're fighting for their freedoms. And it's a great organization to be a part of, because we have the founding principles of Christ. And we fight the battles not just here, but around the world. And, you know, it doesn't stay overseas. The battle is, of course, in our laps. So, yeah, we have groups in many, many nations around the world that are fighting for life, for freedom, for family, for yeah. truth.
Well, I'd yes. love to at some point chat with you about, you know, and maybe even our for your American members, at least do our biblical citizenship course and constitution okay. classes. Just make we do them for free, so make them available to you guys. Maybe that's something new.
That would be amazing.
It helps activate those folks that have gotten interested, seen something, signed a petition, and now they're going, okay, what's next? What can I do? And anyway, yeah, let's chat yeah, offline about that. I'd love to make that available to y'all.
Let's do that. That would be great.
Yeah.
We can tie it to this project
here. Yeah it'd be a perfect time to do it during the 250th. We've been talking about doing one for Canada, you know, and some of the other the other countries, so
who knows
where this all could go. Well, thank you for what you're doing, and thanks for this project. I'm excited. This is a cool thing to be a part of.
Well, thank you. Of course, me too. It's going to be great. Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it so much.
Now, tell us again, do we go to citizengo.com, or is it better to go to that?
You can, but you go straight to the signature page for this with the AmericanCovenantProject.com.
All right.
And just go straight to the signing page, just like you did. That's the simplest way.
Okay, and it was quick, folks. I'm telling you, it's easy to do. The AmericanCovenantProject.com. I'm assuming you would probably tell us you aren't going to email me 40 times a day because I signed up, right? You're not.
We're going to try not. I'll tell you what, if you sign a petition, we leave you alone.
All right. So,
Anna,
thank you. Thank you. God bless y'all. Keep it up. And well written. I'm assuming you had something to do with the wording there.
Yes. Thank you.
Well done, Rick.
It's great to talk to you again.
You as well. Right. Thanks for coming on, and let's chat. I'll reach out to you, and we'll talk about getting biblical citizenship available to you guys. So
that'll be amazing. Okay.
Good stuff.
Have a great day.
You too. All right, folks. So the two websites, you can go to citizengo.org to learn more about the organization itself. And really cool that they did that in the city of Austin. I really didn't know it. It made me actually go look close at the logo and look at the Christian foundations of Austin. I mean, come on. Who would have thought that? I mean, you guys have most of you that listen don't know my old fights with the city of Austin. I used to go toe-to-toe with the city of Austin all the time as a state legislator with a district right outside the city of Austin, and it is, I'm just telling you, it is a city taken by the left. And so for them to win that in that city tells me well done. Well done. A great organization to be a part of. So the American Covenant, also a chance for you to sign on and get your name in that book. Now, she did mention very briefly there the deadline, April 14th. If you want your name in that book, signing that covenant, you need to get signed up before the 14th. So don't put it off. Like I said, I did it even in the 30 seconds that she was describing that. So it's pretty quick and easy to do. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll be taking your calls, 888-589-8840, 888-589-8840. And we'll also talk about some of these headlines of the day. You're listening to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green.
AFR app is a powerful tool, but it does have limitations. You can't use it to change the oil in your vehicle or get rid of carpet stains. It won't walk the dog, won't pick up the dry cleaning, or take the kids to practice. But while you're doing those things, you can listen to your favorite AFR content through the app on your phone, smart device, or Roku. Just go to your app store or visit AFR.net. Listen to AFR wherever you go with the AFR app.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio with your host, Rick Green.
Welcome back to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach. Phone number is 888-589-8840. That's 888-589-8840. The headlines I want to run through real quick. I was trying to remember if, let's see, did the Joe Kent thing blow up before my program on Tuesday or after? I'm trying to remember if I talked about it on the program or not. But I will say this. You know, they're making a big deal out of this. I do think it's a big deal from the standpoint of what kind of scumbag do you have to be to say the opposite of what you said just in, you know, for the previous 5 years, many times, and try to embarrass the president as best you can and weaken American interest and just so that you can side with the anti-Israel folks like Tucker. I'm just telling you, this guy is not the patriot saint that everybody made him out to be in the last few years. I went to Washington State to campaign against him multiple times in 2022 for several reasons. One, because someone I thought would be a great member of Congress, Heidi St. John, was running. And because the first time I saw him, met him, heard him, I just knew in my gut, this guy's bad news. And I was very, very upset when President Trump endorsed him. It was one of, you know, President Trump's been, I mean, he's probably going to end up being my number one rated president in history by the time it's over. He's getting close to that already. But he is terrible at endorsements, sorry. He endorses the worst candidates all the time. And it's for the silliest reasons usually, and it's a lot of, you know, everybody's trying to get to him, to get him to endorse, and it's messy. And this was just one of those that, you know, this guy looked good on paper. He had, you know, actually, I take that back. He did not look good on paper because he was a Democrat. I mean, he was a Democrat that switched to Republican to run for Congress. And because he had served in the military, he looked good on paper to President Trump. His wife had been killed as some sort of Foreign Service officer. I think she was CIA or something. I can't remember. Anyway, long story short, I knew this guy was bad news. And so I campaigned against him on my own nickel, flew out to Washington several times, actually, to campaign for Heidi and against this guy, and took a lot of heat for it because that Republican primary turned out to be, you know, just a crowded field, and it's one of those jungle primary states with a messed up election system. And Kent ended up being, you know, making it to the runoff, and then got beat in the November election, and then ran again and lost again. And then Trump appoints him to this counterterrorism position. And now he has stabbed the president in the back, and, you know, I have no problem with someone resigning if they disagree with policy. I have no problem with someone saying, you know, I just can't execute these orders of the president, and therefore I'm going to leave. But to do this letter and make it a big public deal and immediately go on Tucker in the middle of the war and in the middle of our men and women being in harm's way, and to do it in such a, you know, the hiding behind, well, you know, I can't get into the details and I can't share, especially on the Charlie Kirk thing. Like in his Tucker interview, he's saying all this nonsense about we were investigating the Charlie Kirk assassination and they stopped me from investigating. I don't buy it for a minute, not for a second. The innuendos of trying to act like this was somehow Israel that killed Charlie Kirk and buying into the crazy Candace tinfoil Tucker world, it's just disgusting. It's absolutely disgusting. And part, you know, basically he's showing himself to be what some of us said he was 5 years ago, well, 4 years ago. And so incredibly disappointing. Now, I'm not surprised by Tucker at all. I mean, all you got to do to get on Tucker's program is say Israel's bad and the Jews did all the bad stuff that's happening and President Trump is being schnookered by Israel. And it's so disingenuous and it's so absurd to think that Donald Trump is getting the wool pulled over his eyes by the Israelis and somehow a puppet of Israel. It's just it's ridiculous. And you would think that having worked closely supposedly with the president, now the word is at this point that he was being investigated for leaking national security secrets. And without, you know, had already been, what's the word I'm looking for? Not closed out, but basically frozen. What's the word I'm looking for? Anyway, basically been not included in most of the security briefings over the last few weeks, and had nothing to do with most of the intelligence on Iran that was used as determining factors. But he acts like he was, and so. I'm disappointed, frankly, that the president brought him in that close. And I'm hoping that Tulsi Gabbard speaks out even more. And I am hoping that more evidence comes out of whatever he did, whatever he was doing behind the scenes that caused this. I don't think it's going to be good for him. And the truth will come out, and I think it's going to exonerate the president's decisions, and defend the president's decisions, and probably put Joe Kent in the negative light that he should be put in. So, you know, that's my two cents on that one. You may have some other thoughts on it. 888-589-8840. But man, it sure dominated a lot of the headlines yesterday, and even today continues after his Tucker interview. Okay, so other headlines. Let's see. We got this new Chilean president, Jose Antonio Kast. And I had heard a little bit about this guy from one of my colleagues that works here at Patriot Academy and also involved in some really cool international networks where he goes out and essentially works with a lot of these Christian political operatives around the world that are involved with some of these amazing turnarounds in these countries like El Salvador and Argentina and now Chile. Apparently this guy is a believer and a solid conservative and you know, ally to America. So I am very interested to see what's going to happen. There's just a renaissance in all of the Western Hemisphere right now and the Americas. I think there's so much of this that you can say, you know, I've even kind of simplified it and said, look at what's going to happen after Maduro and after the snatch and grab there and arresting this guy and the turnaround and of hopefully what will happen in Venezuela. Now remember, there's not a regime change in Venezuela. The gal that took over for Maduro was part of the problem. And so I think President Trump's just, you know, negotiating at this point and trying to see how much he can change what's happening down there without having to, you know, be that involved. But with Chile and now Cuba and all of these dominoes falling, folks, this is a complete realignment of the globe. I mean, the whole Iranian thing is when you put Maduro and Venezuela together with what's happening in Iran, together with what's happening in Cuba, this is a complete realignment of world powers, and we're getting to see some really amazing things happen. So be encouraged, and not in fear. Of course, we don't have a spirit of fear, but a power, love, and a sound mind, and just know that God's on the move, man. As my pastor likes to say, Aslan's on the move, and there's some good things happening. Now I know in fact, producer and I were just talking off air about the price of oil. It looks like Brent's up 119, West Texas up close to 195. So, you know, clearly there's a risk here that this gets to the point of causing a you know, global economic issue. Not as high as I thought it would be at this point. I mean, you would think with the Straits and all the stuff that's happened that it would be, you know, just exploding beyond control. We're just now to the point of, you know, even getting back to 10 years ago. And, you know, things that happened under Joe Biden and Barack Obama. And I'm not as concerned as some people are. Now, I do see a headline that Qatar is saying they're not going to guarantee their natural gas contracts for up to 5 years because of the damage from Iran's missiles, saying that it set the region back 10 to 20 years. I'd be surprised if it's actually 10 to 20 years with the technology we have now. And I hate to respond in a selfish way, but immediately I start thinking about how much natural gas we just burn off in Texas because it's not worth capturing and building the pipelines to capture. You know, maybe this could create opportunity for that to be a market that ends up, you know, being captured and being profitable for us here at home. I don't know, man. There's so many things happening. I just feel like it's like we have a ringside seat to one of the greatest fights in history, or a, you know, front row seats to one of the best, you know, shows in history. History is happening in big ways right now, here at home, with the realignment at home and the counter revolution, as Mark Victor Hansen called it the other day, that President Trump is leading. This is a president that is gaining more ground and reshaping the institutions in America than at any time in history. I mean, this is why I really do think by the time he's done, he will be rated as the number one president in history on my list, and maybe historians will say, because of his ability at this point to reshape the institutional structures of America. Certainly already to an extent greater than anybody since FDR, and FDR shaped him in the wrong direction. But if he is successful for the next 3 years in the way that he's been successful in the first year of the second term, even more so than FDR and more so than any president in history. So really interesting to not just to watch, to be a part of, folks. And that's what I'm always going to close out the program, and I'll do that in 30 minutes here. But with saying it's up to you to make sure it's last, that it's not just something that he does from Washington, D.C. and through executive orders or even through legislation that's passed, but it's something that we do at the local level, that we actually restore liberty at the local level, that we rebuild the institutions that make a nation great, that make a society great, our businesses, our faith institutions, our education systems. All of those things have to be rebuilt because the left has dominated those areas and destroyed them, even the media and all of these things. So we've got to do that at the local level, even more so than what he's doing at the national and international level. All right, I said I'd get to the phones. Let's do it. 888-589-8840 is the phone number. 888-589-8840. We'll go to Texas first. Paul in Texas is up first, and I'm sorry, Paul, my software is rebooting. I will get you in about 2 seconds unless the...
There we go.
Oh, okay, gotcha. All right, Paul, go ahead, man. You're up first.
Yes, I think this Joe Kent thing, first of all, thank you so much for the detailed background about him and why he never should have been selected. But this is what I would call a great learning opportunity that I hope Donald Trump would start to put 2 + 2 together and make a list and check it twice and yeah. go back through the meetings and say, who is all the people that told me Joe Kent's the guy, he's got to be on this, we can trust him, and make a list and note of those people and kick them out of his circle. I agree with you totally when it comes to local Texas elections. Donald Trump may know local issues, but some of his endorsements in local areas is just laughable. And I can't, to me, it's obvious that it's kind of like his, you know, dealing with horse trading with a swamp, right?
Right.
But for this one, this is a great opportunity to find out whoever it is. I could make conjectures all day, but whoever is in his cabinet that told this is a good idea, it's a good idea to get rid of them too. That's my call.
Man, I love your approach, Paul, to say, hey, this is a learning opportunity. Let's not just bemoan it, you know, and complain. Let's say, okay, how do we take this and learn from it? 100%. And I think President Trump's endorsements are going to continue to be incredibly powerful and important, even beyond the 3 years. You know, he's gonna have an outsized, influence on elections and who the players are going to be, you know, for as long as he's cognitive and healthy. And then the Trump family will. So, you know, Don Jr. And the rest will continue to have a significant impact on the Republican Party and the future. So I think your point is well taken. I think they should be using this as an example and going back and say, okay, all the way back to 2022, who told me this was the guy to endorse? Now, that doesn't mean that anyone that you know may have analyzed the race and decided that Joe was the right guy, that I don't necessarily agree with your conclusion at the end to get rid of everybody that recommended him, because you know I've made endorsements that backfired or were turned out to be the wrong guy or gal. So I would caution on how far to go with that, but certainly to analyze that whole process and say, where am I getting my recommendations? Where am I getting my analysis of these races? And possibly even decide, you know, how far down the ballot to go in endorsements. I mean, I'm glad that he's endorsed people like my friend Nate Schatzline and other people at the state legislative level, but it's impossible for the president to have enough information or to know all of those people all the way down to that level. Now, Congress, yes, in a congressional race, I think that is, he should go that far. And so you got to do exactly what you just said. Who's given me this advice and how did they miss that one? I want some explanations. Lucy, you got some explaining to do. So whoever it was that recommended Joe Kent to Donald Trump all the way back to 2022, and certainly in the administration after seeing him campaign for those two terms. Now, I will admit, he ended up campaigning fairly well and saying things in his tweets and whatnot that even made me think, maybe I got it wrong. Maybe this guy's a patriot. He's parodying a lot of the stuff that I think is, you know, good stuff, but totally had him pegged from the beginning. And good point, man. Good call. All right, we got more calls to get to when we come back, so stay with me. Rick Green, you're listening to At the Core. We'll be back in a moment.
Abortion moves fast, and right now in our communities, women are being pressured to make irreversible decisions in moments of fear and panic. They're told to act quickly or risk losing support. Many feel they have no other option. But because of you, they do. At Preborn Network Clinics, a woman receives what the abortion industry will never offer. Compassion without pressure. Clarity about the life growing inside her. Real support to welcome her baby. And the hope of the gospel. She's given a free ultrasound and space to breathe. And more than 80% of the time, when a mother sees her baby on a preborn ultrasound, she chooses life. This March, Preborn is believing to save 6,800 babies. but it will take 124 partners saying yes every day. Here's my ask. Pause your busy day for just a moment and become a yes right now. Just $28 provides one ultrasound. $140 helps five mothers. Every dollar helps save babies and share hope. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250, baby, or visit preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio with your host, Rick Green.
Welcome back to At the Core with Walker Waldman and Rick Green. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach. Phone number is 888-589-8840. And Laurie is up next from Iowa. Laurie, go ahead.
Hi, I just wanted to make a comment about the AI thing that seems to be growing by leaps and bounds. I'm older. I'm 78. I read Brave New World in 1984 when I was in school. And science fiction becomes science fact. And
yeah.
People need to know how dangerous AI is. That's just my personal opinion. But I think a little research into it, people need to really know what it entails and how dangerous it can be.
Well, I 100% agree with the recommendation of reading 1984 and Brave New World and Naked Communist and a lot of books that honestly, when COVID hit and the COVID tyranny started, my kids were, mostly still, the two oldest were in their 20s, the other two late teens. And I said, man, we're doing the book club on the porch. And we read all, went back and reread all of those because you need to be reminded just of the nature of man and tyranny and what happens when government gets too much power the signs, all of those things. Animal Farm, every family should read those books. And anyone that wants to preserve freedom for the future needs to know what can happen. On the AI thing, yeah, I think, no question, it will empower those who are evil with the ability to do all of the things that we read about in those books. I don't know that we can stop the technology, and so therefore, at this point, it's one of those things where we have to say, okay, this technology's here, can be used for good or evil, depending on whose hands it's in and what kind of limitations can be placed on it. And so I'm trying to figure out what are the best regulations, what are the best policies. I don't know yet, honestly, and I do think it's going to come down to who's programming it, and it's going to come down to how much competition there is of the various AIs out there. But it is spooky how much it can do. I think about, the whole Terminator series as well, right? And at what point do you get, where it's one AI and it has the ability to access weapons and that kind of thing too. So those are real serious discussions to have. Very concerned about where it could go. Do not think it can be stopped completely, and therefore, okay, how do we, I'm not even sure. I'm an Elon Musk fan on a lot of things. I'm not sure I am on this one. I think he's right about, programming it is important. I'm glad he came out with Grok, because ChatGPT and the others were having total leftist and anti-capitalist input. And I think Grok is more balanced from what I'm reading and being told and what little bit I've tapped into some of these things. So anyway, great call, Laurie. I don't have a solution on that one. I think we have to be definitely thinking it through, though, for sure. Okay, let's go to Kelly in Florida. Florida's up next. Kelly, go ahead.
Hey, I hope that you can hear me.
I hear you with the wind noise. Go ahead.
Okay, very good. So I just wanted to add to the comments that your first caller made regarding who would have been advising President Trump to take Joe Kent into his circle. I believe that would be Stephen K. Bannon. I used to watch his show, The War Room. Oh, my gosh. I couldn't miss an episode. Like 4 hours a day, 2 in the morning, 2 at night, 2 hours on Saturday. and Stephen K. Bannon was like totally pushing Joe Kent on all of us. It's very interesting that he never mentioned that Joe Kent used to be a Democrat. And even though Stephen K. Bannon is not a part of Trump's cabinet, he definitely has had President Trump's ear, especially, you know, when you want to go back to like 2022. So I believe that that's where a lot of that came from.
Very, very interesting, Kelly. I have not been a listener or watcher of the War Room. Obviously familiar with Bannon. I actually met him one time, and clearly there's a lot of bad stuff, you know, now with coming out with Bannon and the Epstein files and his making of that documentary for Epstein and essentially being a defender in terms of the Epstein image. And so I am trying to figure out what the real story is on all that. I'm it's new to me, so I haven't been in that circle. But I find that very, very interesting that you're saying he was one of the main ones pushing Kent. I would be very curious to know, you know, what the relationship was there and the background of that as more of this comes out. So thank you for that. Good call. Okay, let's go to Texas. Rob in Texas, you're up next. Go, Rob.
Hey, Brother Rick, man, I sure love what you do.
Thank you.
I've got I want to get your take on something, Armando, and forgive me the rest of the country for a moment, but this is Texas business. What do you say, Rick, of subdividing our state into five states for three reasons? One, emasculate Austin overnight. Number two, do away with the Robin Hood theft system. And number three, send 10 senators to Washington instead of two.
Yeah, you know, interestingly enough, Rob, I've thought about this. We've actually sat around the fire quite a bit in especially during the COVID crackdowns and trying to figure out what was going to happen with the country, and talked about what that would look like, because Texas has that in our original, when we became a state, and a lot of people used to run around Texas, I even used to say, we're the only state that has it in our agreement that we can secede. That's not true. But what we did have in our agreement when we became a state was that we could subdivide into five states, and that step, normally to become an additional state, you have to have the support of Congress. Congress has to approve it, and every state whose boundaries are affected would have to approve it. What many argue is that because this was in the original agreement that was approved by Congress in 1845, if I've got my dates right, that part has already been approved by Congress and that no state boundary would be affected. Arkansas and New Mexico and Oklahoma would not be affected. Those boundaries would be the same. That it would only be within the boundaries of Texas, and therefore just the Texas legislature doing this would be enough to divide us into five states. Now, the benefits that you mention are what we have always debated around our house and around the fire, those being that you end up with the additional senators, you end up with, frankly, some very conservative states, West Texas, and depending on how you divide it up, and you basically get out away from Austin and Dallas and Houston being able to drive so much of Texas policy. Texas is not as red as everybody thinks it is. We're really, honestly, purple. And our legislature is not conservative. It's got some very good conservative members, but they don't have the majority. And so I'll tell you what I like about it, and then I'll tell you why I ultimately think it would never happen. I like the idea. I've often thought about the fact that I would love to have a West Texas state that could be super conservative, could be, you know, a bastion of conservatism and show the rest of the world how to do it right, not have any of the big cities in it, and I think it'd be amazing. I don't think there's any way it would happen because Texas is so... We are such a state of mind, and there is such a, we have such a personality and pride in our ownership. I mean, just the shape of Texas changing would be tough to sell, and I've become less a fan of the idea as the revolution of for freedom and the rebuilding of liberty has taken hold and people have awakened and more churches have gotten involved, and all of these things have made me more optimistic about saving all 50 states and ultimately all of Texas as well. So I'm less enamored with the idea. Now, what I will say, Rob, is that I do still very much advocate for a lot of other states to divide. Texas, I don't think would do. And by the way, the senatorial gain, I don't think would be. I think it would be a break even, honestly, because I think you would end up with, if you broke into five states and had 10 senators from what was the former state of Texas, I think you would end up with probably three conservative states and two liberal states. By the time you know, Houston would basically be at its own state. You know, anyway, the way it would break out, you would probably end up with six conservative senators and four liberal senators, which means you don't have a net gain. Yeah, so you still end up with essentially where you were in terms of the U.S. Senate, and then Congress would probably break down about the same. So I don't think it actually ends up being a net gain in terms of what happens in Washington, D.C. It would mostly be a net gain for those three conservative states to no longer have to battle the city, you know, liberal influence. But anyway, I do think there are states like Washington State that should split. I think the Greater Idaho movement up there is a good thing, but I think it's even better if Eastern Washington is its own state and Western Washington its own state. I do think Oregon should split. I think California should split. I don't think you have the same pride of the state as a whole. And there's more of an ability there and more of a desire. They're so different, Eastern Washington and Western Washington. You know, Portland is so left-wing dominated now, and yet you have these rural areas of Oregon. Now, you could argue it's that way in every state because it is the blue cities versus the rural areas typically, and that goes back to the founders. I mean, they knew that. Jefferson and Rush have this great correspondence back and forth calling the cities pestilential to the morals and health of man, that they're like abscesses on the human body where all the impurities of mankind flow. That's a quote from I think it was Rush. It might have been Jeff. No, it was Rush because he was the medical doctor that talked like that. So that's been always the problem, the big cities. And it's just the nature of man, the depravity of man. You cram a bunch of people in one place and they're going to be more depraved. You get out in the country, you see God's hand and you see creation and you have to be responsible for what you do. And it's always better in terms of the type of citizens that it produces. So anyway, I do think, listen, the founders were, they were concerned about how big the population could get and a republic still work, a constitutional republic still work. Some of them thought 50 million would be the max that you could get to. We're at 330 million, folks. Texas is at, 30 million by itself. California, 55 million or whatever it is. So I don't think the experiment's over. I think it would be wise. I think it'd be good for the liberals in Washington State to have, you know, Western Washington be their state. And great for the conservatives to have Eastern Washington be their state. Now, listen, I got friends that would be stuck that are in Seattle and in some of the more blue liberal areas that totally disagree with what I'm saying. They don't want to have to move to Eastern Washington or the state of Spokane or whatever it would become in order to live in freedom. But, you know, this is the way of the world. This is what happens. This is, I mean, look at Israel and Judah and the 12 tribes splitting up. And I mean, this is how things end up happening. I don't want the nation of the United States to split. I think that becomes a target. If America were to split, and I know I'm getting off topic a little bit here, but if America were to split, if the 50 states were to break up, if you were to end up with three or four nations out of that, I'm telling you, the West Coast, the left coast, it would be very vulnerable and potentially become a Chi-Com, you know, Chinese communist dominated area. And then they're right on our border. So I think you have to really think through a lot of those things for these people that say, hey, let's just break up and Texas should secede and all this kind of stuff. I don't think that's a good path. I think you've got to fight for all 50 states. I think you've got to fight to hold the union together and restore liberty and have a revival and a reformation of liberty and good values and win all 50 states. That's what I'm fighting for. But within that, even winning that, I think it's okay for states to split up and ultimately have a legislature and a society community where most decisions are made. That's the system of federalism. That's the experiment the founders actually supported. Have a state that supports your values. And instead of having these blue cities dominate so many of these states, let's break them off into their own state and then let the rural areas govern themselves. That's my take on it. I don't think that's crazy. I don't think that's outside the realm of possibility. I think that can be done. And that's why you have these movements, the Jefferson movement in Northern California, the greater Idaho movement in Oregon and Washington. But it takes time for those ideas to cement and marinate and takes a lot of political action. It takes people getting involved and saying enough is enough. And so if that's something you want to put your energy into in some of those places, I think you should. I think those are worthy causes. I don't think, back to our original caller Rob's comment about Texas, I just don't think it'll happen in Texas unless we don't solve the immigration problem. And if we don't solve the immigration problem, and you've got all these Muslim communities and other communities that are anti-American and incompatible with Western civilization and a constitutional republic, if that continues, then you may end up with Dallas and Houston and Austin, San Antonio, potentially becoming so bad that you do end up splitting up. I hope that's not the direction, though. I think we can. I think revival is in the land, folks. Let's turn this thing around. Let's disciple the harvest and win this country back to the Lord and back to freedom. Out of time. Thanks for listening. You've been listening to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.